Daniel chapter 1. As I said, if you weren't here last week and you need to kind of, you want to be updated to how this whole book of Daniel comes into play, how Daniel comes into play, that's what we did, the entire study last week, and it's online from 2 Chronicles 36, an introduction to Daniel. In the third year, I'm going to read verses 1 through 14. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Did you read that? The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his god, small g, and that's Marduk, a false god of Babylon. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his god. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. Girls, are you looking for a guy like this? Okay, and the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training, 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who's appointed you food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are also your age? Then you would endanger my head, in other words, to get chopped off, before the king. So Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies as you see fit, and so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. I might be a little high on monitor because I'm hearing it back. So the Lord gave into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. In this first wave of the captivity where Nebuchadnezzar comes, he's actually not yet the full king, but his father dies while he's there, and he rushes back, and he takes these people with him, which was his common practice. All of this, another person who went to Babylon during this time is Ezekiel, and he writes from Ezekiel, from Babylon. And Jeremiah is preaching, and Jeremiah's been preaching, as we said last week, 40 years. And Jeremiah's been preaching what the prophet Isaiah has been saying and other prophets, and God said back in Leviticus and Deuteronomy, and this has been going on for 490 years. So this isn't a sudden move by God. 2 Kings 24 tells us the story. Isaiah 39, he prophesies to King Hezekiah, one of the good kings of Israel, that at the end of his life, when it's all over, because of how he dealt at the very end, is also part of it. He had a good life. He had a good kingship, but then he kind of fell short towards the end. And he says, the king of Babylon is going to come and take some of the sons and daughters of your people and your leaders as his servants, and the articles that you showed to these Babylonian visitors, proud of your gold things that you had from your temple. You see, Israel was worshiping in the temple, but worshiping idols, false gods. Some were worshiping, claiming it's God, but doing it completely their own way. And, you know, God's not superstitious. He's not stuck on his temple or the articles that are used by the priests in the temple. He sends them to Babylon. It's like, You see, you defiled and abused my witness, Israel. I gave you these things as a witness to the world to be a beacon and a shining light, and you're using them for false idols. I'm going to send you to the idol capital of the world, Babylon. They had hundreds of gods. Their chief god is Marduk, but that's not all. It's just a, and the Chaldeans are the inner circle of the original people of the entire Babylonian Empire. And they have their own direct line of their worship and their things. But God's not afraid to just let that temple go and let those items go. On the other hand, Nebuchadnezzar was saying, my God's better than your God. I'll take you and I'll take his stuff to my place. And, you know, we know by knowing the story ahead that Nebuchadnezzar is going to have a rude awakening. And then his grandson, Belshazzar, is going to have an even ruder awakening about God's elements, because they were a witness. Even when they were in Babylon, they were a witness of who God is, and that never stops. Israel stopped being a witness, but it didn't stop God from being a witness. God will reveal himself to Nebuchadnezzar, but that comes later. There's two more waves to come before Jerusalem's destroyed. Now, Daniel's name means the Hebrew for his name, God is my judge. Hananiah is God has favored. Mishael is what God is, or strong and mighty in God. You know how these translations of names, there's a couple of different possibilities. I'm not saying these are exact, but pretty close. Azariah means Jehovah has helped. So you got these guys whose names, God's my judge, God's helped me, I'm strong in God, God's helped me. What were their parents like in this wicked place of Jerusalem, and these princes, these young men who were high elites and were trained in Israel? Gosh, it sounds like they were named pretty great, weren't they? Were their parents some of the few that were still serving the Lord? Maybe their grandparents. You got to name your kid this. You guys are off the wall now, but at least name your kid godly. I'm praying for him. Any grandparents in here doing that? In situations where maybe the parents aren't doing the job necessarily? Sure, that's always going to be some of that. Was that what's happening? Is the parents or the grandparents serving God? Or is it just that they're Jewish people and Jewish people name their kids with Bible names? Because Christians, even in name, sometimes name their kids Christian names and Bible names. There's people that don't know God and name their kids Bible names. So we don't know. On the other hand, the character of these young men, it seems apparent that they had been instilled in them something more. But you have to, you can speculate with me. We just don't know how their parents were doing or their grandparents, but often it's somebody back in their history was being faithful even when things were crumbling around them. And some of you have known that. Some of you, your life has been blessed by that help through that. And you know what? Their name spoke of their heritage, and their heritage spoke of their destiny. Here's what that means. Their past, where they came from somewhere specific. I don't just mean physically, though for Israel, that's specific. They had a heritage in God. And their heritage in God, what they were taught and what they knew about who he was from eternity past that was passed down through the Bible to them, now would dictate for them, if they let God, their destiny, because that's what God has for them. Your heritage dictates your destiny. Now, some of you may say, well, I didn't have a Christian heritage. Well, it started some point, and if it hasn't started yet, today's your day, because you can hop on the heritage train. Because even though I was raised Jewish and I had that heritage, Jesus and God were not very real to me. I had a standard in my life. We're Cohens. We're priest family. I never was told that. We're Cohens, meaning you're one of us, our family destiny, and we're part of Israel. We're Jews, and that's who we are. And just this is how we act, and this is how we operate, because you have a heritage to live up to. And that's not a burden pressuring a kid to be something they're not when it's the right way. That's a healthy thing. You have a purpose. How many children in our country over the last whatever, you fill in the blank number of years, have no idea of their United States history. You know, it's all been twisted, left behind, and doesn't even exist in a lot of minds. They don't have an idea about American history and the heritage of this country. They don't have a family history that matters to them. And by the way, you can't help it if your family history is everybody back to great-great-great-great-grandpa was a crook and a horse thief. Don't worry, you're not stuck there. That's not who you're going to be. But people don't really talk about their family. Okay, I know we're doing the whole DNA thing these days, but for the most part, you know, it's all about the you right now, where children are being robbed. And if you're a children in here, you're in a younger generation, you can say it's just an old man talking. I get that. But what if you've been robbed? What if you've been robbed of knowing a history that matters for your future? Because it's a diabolical scheme, not by people, but by the enemy of God, to keep you from knowing your true heritage and therefore your true destiny. What if your video screen and all the stuff of today is not enough? Because it really isn't. Not enough to sustain you. You have a heritage and a destiny, and how many don't know their spiritual heritage? These guys were taken from Judah, and we might say, well, that's terrible. That was so bad, and their parents crying as they're taken away, and we just don't know that circumstance exactly, but probably. On the other hand, maybe they were spared quite a bit because they were called to greatness, and they achieved greatness in Babylon for God. Nebuchadnezzar took the very best of every place he went of their young people, and he indoctrinated them 100% into Babylonian Chaldean culture. I mean, he was smart. He changed their names. He had this guy change his names. Daniel was changed to, his name meant Bel is prince. Hananiah's name was changed to mean illuminated by the sun god. Meshach's name was changed to his name, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He who is like Venus, which there's other possibilities, they say. Azariah was changed to the servant of Nebo, Abednego. They changed their names so they'd hear Babylonian gods every time their name was called and not hear their own name. God is my judge. Jehovah provides and takes care of me, etc. They were given the best food and the best clothes and taught a whole new language, and the goal was to erase their heritage and therefore erase that destiny that they had. Are you with me? This is the purpose. This guy's smart. He wants people under his wing to become his emissaries to do his work, and he wants them totally focused on Babylon. Everything else is gone. It's just Babylon now. That other stuff doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. And they would not only erase their previous heritage and therefore their previous destiny and eternal destiny, but they'd also see Nebuchadnezzar as their great provider of everything. There's a story behind my mispronunciation, and maybe I'll tell it to you someday. But you'll be blessed if I don't. How can these guys possibly stand with all of that happening to them? I mean, it is unfathomable to try to think how could they possibly stand, but stand they did. Which tells me that even though we pay up to hundreds of thousands of dollars per family to send children to schools that are much like this. Parents pay money. And I'm not saying don't send your kid to college. I'm not making a total clear-the-table statement about it. But, you know, the most influential people in our country today are college professors. They're not the people on CNN or Fox News in terms of young people. They don't watch either of that stuff. And they don't listen to the chatter that you listen to, you older guys. And they don't follow that. So they follow peers, and they follow elites of their culture, and they follow college professors who have instilled in them. And they're the ultimate authority for many, 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 many young people in our country. And But stand they did. So doesn't mean you can't, but you better have something going, really going, if you're going to stand with that kind of pressure. And so, you know, I know Christian parents who are raising a child and their ex-mate or the person who's the other parent is completely ungodly, not necessarily a bad person, evil or intended or anything, but they're just not a Christian. Sometimes it's worse. And they're raising their kid and teaching them Jesus, and their kid goes the other part of the time to the other parent. You know this. Some of you have been through this. And they're getting everything undone, and they fight that battle spiritually all the time, right? It's a very difficult thing. Multiply it about 100 times here. Because this is what Daniel's facing alone with his friends. And you notice this. He won't eat the king's meat because not only is it unkosher, but it's been offered to idols. The wine was okay for Israelites to drink, but it was probably a part of the whole pagan practice thing that the king had with his gods. And Daniel, knowing that, you know, in the New Testament, we say, look, if you're offered some food, don't worry about where it came from. You know that God made it. But this wasn't like that. And this is the Old Testament. He's under the law. Even though everybody in Israel's forgotten the law, Daniel believes in the law, believes in God's authority. And so all this stuff is contrary, and he's got to make a stand. Notice this. He doesn't make an issue of his name. He doesn't, every time they say his name, no, my name's Daniel, God is my judge. Kind of, what I get out of this, and I'm just giving you what I get out of this, is you can call me whatever you want. I know who I am. I'm not going to fight every battle that I can't win or that isn't necessary to fight. Now, you want me to break my covenant with God? Now we got a problem. And so Daniel purposed in his heart. Oh, by the way, I got to tell you this first. Remember what kind of person Nebuchadnezzar is, who said, you're going to eat the food I eat, all my best stuff is for you guys. And for him to hear, we don't want your stuff. Well, what is this guy? Well, he's the guy that later on, when he comes back for the last time, whether he goes personally or not, sends his armies, they bring Zedekiah, the last king of Jerusalem, of Judah, and they take his sons and kill them in front of him, make him look, you know, like hold his eyelids open. I'm exaggerating, but they make sure he sees. He watches his sons be killed in front of him, and then they poke out his eyes. So the last thing he remembers seeing forever the rest of his life will be that his sons were killed in front of him, slaughtered. Who even can think up something like that? Well, it says in Genesis that when God lifted Noah up in the ark, that the thoughts of men were only evil continuously. That there is a direction that sin will take you, whether you want to go there or not. This isn't about, I can just control it. Sin will take a person, a family, a nation, a culture down a road that doesn't stop till it's totally destroyed. That's where sin will take us. The only thoughts they had were evil continually because they had been indoctrinated into that issue. So he's dealing with a guy who has this kind of diabolical mind. God's going to deal with Nebuchadnezzar. God's going to show miracle power and the world history to Nebuchadnezzar, this pagan evil king, because he's giving testimony to the world and he knows what he wants to do with this guy. But Daniel is standing up and his purpose is in his heart. And what does that mean? He purposed in his heart. There was a special, one of the translations of words that most makes sense. There's many ways to say this, but what I love is when I looked it up carefully, he had a special place for God in his heart, and he wasn't going to give it up. Hear that. He had a special place for God in his heart, and he wasn't going to give it up, which meant he wouldn't defile himself, which is just pollute himself with the king's meat. So how does a person purpose in their heart? Well, it's not necessarily easy, but here's the one thing I know that has to happen, and I'll give you a couple of thoughts. I won't do an exhaustive, Rick knows exactly how to say this. That would be nice, but Rick doesn't know exactly how to say this, but I do have some things to say. Number one, you have to decide before you face a circumstance what your kind of decision is. Okay? Before you face the trial, you better have made up your mind. You know, there are certain things in your life you do. I won't ask you to raise your hand, but how many of you either brush your teeth, floss, or mouthwash every day? Don't raise your hand. How many of you don't? Raise your hand. No. But there's things, you know, if you, every morning you woke up, it was a new decision. Should I brush my teeth? That would be a bad thing for you and for those that come close to you. Because you're reinventing the wheel over and over and over and over again about something that should have been settled when you were 4 years old. By that time, your parents, five, whatever it is, I got to brush my teeth. Okay, 8 years old. I don't know when a kid gets it. I let Gail take care of that. But there's things that you have predetermined already. And everybody here has some of those things. They could be very small. It's like, this is important to me. It doesn't change because the world spins a little different tomorrow, because I'm with different people. You're going to have to figure out what those things are for you and decide beforehand when you face the trial. And just briefly, I remember as a young man, and I was doing well painting apartments, and I was a contractor, and I found $2,660 in a roll with a rubber band of 50s and 100s, probably drug money, in this empty apartment. And the whole way I found it, they were supposed to prepare the apartment. They would have found it, the staff of the apartment complex, but they didn't get to cleaning it out for me, and I said, I'll take care of it, and so then I found it. I picked it up, and I said, I know what this is. It's not mine. I had predetermined that because I'd find things in the apartments, and other than a quarter on the floor, I took some quarters on the floor, and I said, those are mine. Okay. I didn't make an issue of the quarters. But if I found money or certain possession or jewelry, I knew that this is not mine. It belongs to the company. That was predetermined, and I didn't really need anybody there to tell me that. God told me that. It's not yours. And I knew it. So when I found it, I didn't go through this trial. Oh, $2,600, but should I give it or shouldn't I give it? Or what, but what about this and that, and my wife needs this and that and all? You know, people do a lot of that. Christians do a lot of that. Totally unnecessary. Without any reason. Because they haven't predetermined clarity about things. Now, there's other things that are gray, and I get that. Don't try to fix that right now. Just here's what you should do, in my opinion. Am I doing this in my life where I can? Don't bring up all the challenges to it right now. Are you doing it where you can do it and where you know you should do it? Forget about all the gray stuff. That's just a way to get out of facing what I'm talking about. I don't know who I'm talking to, but now you know I'm talking to you if you're doing that right now. $2,660, I go and grab the maintenance man who doesn't like working there, making a very small amount of money. This is a big deal to him. This is a little more than half of, I was doing really good then, but that wasn't my reason or my motivation. And I'm not Mr. Pure, I'm just saying this was something that was settled for me, okay? I grabbed him, I didn't tell him what I had. I said, come on, we gotta go to the office, because the lady in the office and he don't get along. And she didn't like it there that much either. In fact, very few people at these complexes liked working there and were happy with their wage and all of that. You know, there's a lot of grumbling. So I knew that I couldn't just hand it to any one of them and say, would you turn this into the police, because it might never get there. So I needed two people, and it worked. I had two people that didn't like each other that went in cahoots, and they knew that I knew that they were supposed to call the police, and I left it with them, and I went back, and it was done. Except the cops came to me, the policeman came to me and said, are you Richard Cohen? I said, yeah. He goes, I need your address and stuff. Why? Well, you found the money. I said, yeah. Well, it's yours if they don't claim it. You're not an employee, are you? I said, no, I'm just a contractor. He goes, well, it's like you found it on the street. Really? Okay. So I gave him my info. I didn't know that. Didn't matter. I had a commitment to turn that in because if I found something on the property, it's theirs. until it's clearly told me different. I don't renegotiate that because of the amount that I find. Okay, I did. 25 cents, I admit it. See, I'm imperfect. They hated me, you know, because I turned them. They looked at me like, you're such an idiot. I could see it in their eyes that, like, you're such an idiot. We could have used this money ourselves personally. I would have kept it. I can't believe you're such a whatever. They didn't have a good look towards me. But, you know, they also would come to me later and trust me when they needed to talk about something. So anyway, later on, they actually asked me if I would, it was getting close to the time, 3 months be up, I get the money. We want you to split the money with us. Would you do that? We need to buy a golf cart for the property. And everybody in my family, no offense, honey, everybody in my family said, and all my extended family said, you shouldn't do that. They have no right to ask you that. And they didn't have any right to ask me. That was wrong. But when I found it, it was their money. So when I prayed about it, I felt like God said, well, when you found it, Rick, whose was it? Theirs? So then in your mind, they have the right, in your conviction, they have the right to ask you that, even though it's wrong. So I said, yes, I'll split. I said, you're wrong for asking me this, but I'd be wrong to not split it with you, and I did. And you know, somebody was trying to steal all my work from me then, and when the district manager found out the whole story, he went to bat for me and got rid of this guy that was trying to oust me to get his buddy in. And I had a lot of good work there, and God was protecting me. And I don't mean to grandize myself here on this. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes, but I don't want to tell you about those. This one... I've done a lot of stupid things, and I've done that back and forth thing. The reason if somebody can talk about stuff well, it's because they've done it. So I've done it, just like you have. But I'm here to say for the Lord Jesus, not for myself. When you get a chance to make a clear decision before you ever face a situation, and you have a lot of chances for that, make the decision and then stick to it. But that's not easy. I get it. You know, Daniel decided beforehand. Daniel had boundaries. I will say this, I will never be strong in the Lord without a clear boundary in my life. Skip Josh, I told you I was going to ask you a question today. You're a baseball guy. Little League home plate, how wide is it? You know? Actually, it's 17 is what the pro said to me. But that's very. But here, you get a second chance. Major League Baseball plate. Now, we can go later, and I'll correct myself next week. I'll go online and have a TV show and tell everybody I was wrong. But I quoted from a guy in sports who used the same example for this purpose, said, you know, a little league baseball plate 17 inches wide. And he goes, you know how big a big league? It's 17 inches wide. You don't mess with home plate. Start messing with home plate to adjust it to the preference or the need of the pitcher or whatever, you lose baseball. This is baseball. This is home plate. There's some standards that don't change. And I just thought, well, I'll remember the 17 inches, and so will you now. And it'll remind you of something more important than baseball. Daniel's not arrogant, but he's wise. He's confident. He was in good graces with this guy. He was treating this guy with respect, and he went to him with respect. You know, you can go to somebody who's asking you to do wrong or against the will of God, and you can still be respectful to them. If you're always looking for a battle, you know, to prove your Christianity, that you're strong in the Lord, and you're not letting no heathen tell you what to do, you're not really representing Jesus. You're representing your own pride. Now, there's a time to stand up and stand up straight and square. You know, but Daniel does a really good thing. He says, this is important to me. I'm not going to eat unkosher. I not only have a boundary, I'm in a covenant with God. You see, Abraham is called the friend of God, right? People that know Abraham is called God's friend. Daniel, one time, God says, talking about Samuel, Moses, and Daniel says, even if these three stood before me, I wouldn't answer this prayer. How high he elevated Daniel. And Daniel would equally be to Abraham a friend of God. And you know what? I can say, and I believe many of you can say this, and you shouldn't be afraid to, God's my best friend. Gail's my best human friend. She was until I said everybody in my family failed that test. But, Gail's my best friend on earth. I have a lot of good friends, and I thank God it's a miracle I have any friends. But God is my best friend. Nobody has to be afraid to say that. But he's not just my best friend. He wasn't just Abraham's best friend, and he wasn't just Daniel's best friend. Daniel was in a covenant with God. He had a healthy fear of God. No one risks their life, listen to me, no one risks their life for a best friend's preference. My best friend wants me to do this, but I'll probably get killed or lose my job or however you want to fill in the blank. But he's my best friend, and that's his preference. And, you know, I like him so much that I'll just risk my life for his preference. You don't do that for a best friend. You risk your life for a best friend when you're actually saving their life, and you're not saving God's life. So when you're risking your life for God, you're risking your life for your Lord, your King, the one who bought you from your sin, the one who you're in covenant with. What we did in communion is representation of the new covenant in Jesus' blood. You have a covenant with God. If you're a Christian today, you don't just have a relaxed, easy, cool man, kapasa relationship with God. You're in covenant with him. And Daniel, his covenant with God was holy to him, even if everyone else in his whole family, in his whole city, in his whole nation quit, gave it up. He came from a land where they had rejected their covenant with God, and he was suffering for the rejection of that covenant by everyone around him. We don't know for sure his parents or his grandparents, but we know that in whole, as a mass, Israel, Judah, had turned away long before from their covenant with God, as God was patiently showing mercy and was raising up people named Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And these guys kept their covenant with God even though the world around them had given it up and quit. If we are keeping our Christianity and our decision-making like this, which way is the wind blowing? What are my friends doing? What's the what does Christianity Today or Christian Magazine say? Just any of it. I'm not picking on anything that's been said. I'm not talking about all that. Just picking out names. If you know, what does this recent author say? If I find it in the Word and it's true, and it's a holy truth of God's Word, it's a holy truth of God's Word until God changes it, and he doesn't. So now, there again, there's other issues. But you know, honoring God and honoring the covenant he had with God was not optional to him. If you haven't predetermined that you're in a covenant with God, if you don't understand your relationship with God in the deeper sense that it is, you're not going to be able to stand. You're not doing it for your buddy. God's my buddy. You're not doing it because it makes you feel good. You're doing it because you know the difference between right and wrong. And right matters because God is true and you're in covenant with him. That's how Daniel did it, and I don't know how he did it other than God shows us that he did it. But it wasn't optional for him to say, you know, I trust the true God. I know it. Azariah, you know, you trust God. Yeah, and Michelle, we know God, but, you know, these people don't. They don't know God, so, you know, we kind of got to go along to get along. There's a word for that. It's not vulgar. I checked it out. Poppycock. That's poppycock. Got to go along to get along. You know, how much has been lost because of that kind of thought process? Again, not being uptight and fighting everything people do. Call me what you want. I know who I am. But a Christian is going to learn to know their boundaries and their borders. And I don't make all of them for you because some of them are personal. Some of them are clear in Scripture, and I'll be very straight about it when somebody comes to me. And some of them are... they are gray areas, but the thing is that if you're trying to walk in the gray, you're not helping yourself, and you're not kidding anybody. If your whole life is in the gray, you got no color. you don't have real life happening in that. So you know, perhaps the question is, there, Daniel didn't say we got to go along to get along. He knew that his dedication to God was his witness. It wasn't what a nice guy he was. I know some really guys that are much nicer than me, but they're not a witness of their faith in God. They're just nice guys. His dedication is his witness, and so is mine. To the living God is our real witness. You know, Eric Little is a guy that many of us know. We have a book, his, from the YWAM books, 12-year-old age reading, that you can read his book so quickly and easily, but it's so rich. And I love those books because you can really read them and they're not overdone with, you know, this thick biographies. They're small. And Eric Little, of course, was the guy who in the Olympics, before World War II, he said they made the day of his big race, which he was hands down going to win, really fast guy, that it was going to be on Sunday. And he didn't believe that he should work or do anything on Sunday, and he wouldn't race. I mean, it cost him to keep his commitment. Now, I understand that you and I, there are people who would say, oh, man, that's just legalistic. That's like, if you want to miss the point, you can't miss it any further than you just did. I get it that we, you know, I'm not a person that demands Sunday for the day of worship. I don't find that in Scripture that you have to. So I'm free from that. I can speak very freely. I'm not demanding of you that Sunday is your day of worship. But I do find it very interesting. Eric Little made a stand about what he believed in, and he wasn't going to let the world mold him, and everyone knew where he stood. How about you? Does everyone know where you stand? Why not if they don't? Do they know where you stand about Christ, about your commitment? I think Eric Little was a great example. Do we suffer? Do you and I suffer loss for our faith? I wonder if the reason we don't have persecution to any great degree in the U.S. is because, and I'm talking about myself here with you, and I'm asking, I'm not saying it's this way, but is it because we don't put anything on the line? We don't have to, so we don't. Do we suffer loss for our faith? Or do we always take the easy street and say, well, you know, you got to go along, get along to go along, or get along, go along to get along. And that doesn't really matter because I have liberty in Christ and nothing. I mean, what are the things that matter? Well, it's all internal. It's, you know, I can tell you this, it's not all internal. It's actually how you live it out with people and decision making. And if everything in your life takes precedence over the gathering of the body of Christ, over being in the community of believers, if everything else takes precedence over your time with Jesus, then that's very telling for you. And you can say, I'm not under legalism, don't put legalism on me. You can say that all day, and I'll say to you, you're in trouble. You don't owe me anything, and I'm not your boss or your God, and I'm not saying, you notice I'm being vague because I'm not here to make rules, but does everything else, is your Christianity in actual practice always end up going under? I mean, why would my boss, my coach, my teacher, my friends, my family respect my faith and my commitment if I don't? If you're waiting for them to bow down to your beliefs, are you kidding me? They're not going to do it, and they have no reason to until you say, here's my line, and it doesn't move. Are you with me? Am I being too harsh? Somebody say, you're being way too harsh, and then I'll get even stronger because I'll feel insecure and I'll have to really push. You know me so well, you'd never do that because you don't know he'll go on forever. You don't think I know what you're thinking out there. Listen. I want you to think about it seriously. I don't want to read Daniel chapter 1. I know, he didn't eat the king's meat. You know, we heard that before. It's all for young people. It is for young people because he was young. But it's for old people because we're all challenged. It's for all people. What is your commitment to Jesus Christ? And the challenge of that, of being saved by grace and believing that I'm forgiven, and also being challenged to take steps in the right direction, welcome to the club. That's called healthy tension. Don't ask me to erase that or fix it. That's a healthy tension you have to churn through if you care. If you don't care, meow. This just goes right past you, and you just go on with your life, and you never think about it again until some other time in life. Well, that's between you and God. If it challenges you because it is God's word and because we are speaking it as clearly as we can, that's good. And if it shakes you up a little bit, that's better. Because I need to get shook up. Being a pastor doesn't make you immune from any of this. It makes you more accountable for all of it. He gave up his best race, Eric Little did. But then he won anyway when they let him race a race that he wasn't used to running. But you know what? He then went after there. Instead of glorying in the glory of England and all the glory of being this great athlete, and I'm not knocking athletics at all. I'm just, this is the guy that came in my mind. He's well known. He went to China as a missionary, and he died in his 40s. In a internment camp that the Chinese had during it was earlier than World War II, so it was way before turn of the century, and then he was about 40 when he finally died, without fame, without fortune, sick for a long time, ministering to all the people in this camp. And do you feel sorry for Eric Little? You know, the reason there's a book about him, and not just that book that we have, is not because he was a great athlete. There are books about great athletes who are nice guys or even good Christians. The reason there's a book in here about him is because of his character and his faith, not his athletic ability. The reason that he's an example of our heritage, that's my heritage right there. Do you understand what I'm saying? My family was wonderful, and I love them, and I have some good history with my Jewish relatives all the way back to Moses, I guess, and all of them. You know, but that's heritage-wise, I claim Eric Little. Do you? I claim all the people that went before us that said, I will serve God and I will do the right thing even when it costs me. Those are the people we stand on their shoulders. Not the people that said, oh, well, you know, this is a different situation and, you know, you can't always do. You don't stand on their shoulders. That's quicksand. You stand on the shoulders of people who stood for God and it cost them. Rick, you're being so intense. Let's go to somebody who's better at being intense than me. The cover of your bulletin. This is Jesus. Then he said to them all, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself. I'm going to stop for a minute because you just rumble off these words, you know, you just roll right through. Let him deny himself. Let her deny herself. Let him deny himself. Let him. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself. Now, there's my greatest enemy. It's not the world. It's not the rules they have. Not the way they've changed culture to make it hard for me to serve. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and he himself is destroyed or lost? In the old King James, then he loses his soul. You know, I just can't improve on that. I won't touch that further. Do you feel sorry for Eric Little? I don't. Like Paul the Apostle had said, you know, my race is finished and I'm almost done. But from this point forward or ahead, looking ahead to me, I'm looking now to the prize that awaits me and all of those who love him at his appearing. There's a prize awaiting him. And let me say this, it's important. Many of you actually have suffered loss for your faith, and you've done the right thing. It isn't like every time you preach, you have to tell people how bad they've been. I'm telling you what it says about it the best I can. I'm telling you some of the dangers that we tend to get ourselves into ruts about. But I'm also going to say, thank God for people around me who right now are part of my heritage and my destiny. People like you in this room who you know it, and other people around you might not. You've sacrificed in huge ways. You've suffered loss because you've been faithful. So here's what I want to tell you. I don't feel sorry for you either. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying I don't have compassion or ever pray for people's difficult challenge in doing the right thing. Of course I do. And I want people to care about me and my difficult challenges. But feel sorry for you because you're learning to do the right thing and you're being a witness to other people of what it really means to be a Christian. Because when you suffer loss, you have treasure in heaven and you're going to have glory. And because whatever you're going to lose here, let me show you exactly what it is. You ready? That's what you're going to lose here by being faithful to God. Your life is but a vapor which appears for a moment. And every single thing that you let go of that you're so, and I'm so worried about losing, and I don't just mean physical possessions. You can't lose it when you lose it to God. See, because you give it to God, not to people, not expecting in return, not maybe this will work out. I'll do this so I'll get that result. That's called manipulation. Even giving to God money so you'll get money is manipulation. You give to God because he created you, he made you, and you belong to him. And he is your provider. But the concept of giving to God so you'll get something back. Well, it does say give and you'll be, yeah, but where's the heart in it that it's teaching you? So these things weigh heavy on my heart because the day and age we live in is fairly contrary. And the road that we've gone down as a culture, I think the church has given up a lot of ground. I do. And I don't know how you work that out. I think you have your own walk with the Lord, and some of you have really made strong decisions, and I admire you, and some of us are maybe weighing our options right now, and maybe you've been tempted to enlarge home plate, and I just want to encourage you, don't. Verse 15 through 21. At the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the younger men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. This proves that we should all be vegetarians. No, it doesn't. Because the New Testament goes on to say every creature of God's good to be. You know, if you're a vegetarian, that's great, but that's not the point of this. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. So he's a pretty gifted guy, would you say? And the end of the days, the king said that they should be brought in, and the chief of the eunuchs brought them before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king interviewed them, and among them was none found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king. So they're raised up in the midst, and in all matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus, which, by the way, is the year when Cyrus releases the Jews to go back, as Daniel will prophesy through this book, as Jeremiah would prophesy, as Isaiah would prophesy. He lives a long life. He never comes back to Jerusalem. He goes straight to heaven. You know, do not pass go. I mean, just pass, go right past everything and go. But he spends his life in Babylon. He serves God faithfully there. So can you be in politics and do it? Of course you can. Can you be in the system of the world with all those professors? Well, you can. Do you need to be very clear about who you are and where you should be? You better. They passed God's test, they passed man's test, and they were exceptional, but it was their godly heritage and destiny that was the greatest issue, not their talents and skills. Those came from God as well. And God is your best friend. I want to end this saying, He is your best friend. You don't have anybody who loves you more than he does, and you don't have anybody who's kinder to you than he is. You don't have anybody who will be with you like he will. He's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. But he's more than your best friend. And I do know that you know this. Some of you might not. But most of you do. And many of you have sacrificed for the kingdom. And if you have, there is a crown waiting for you. And you're going to hear the Lord say, well done. The voice that you're going to hear is going to make all the voices that tell you you're an idiot and a fool for following Jesus disappear. The voice that you're going to hear is going to, the voice that tells you, yeah, but you can do both of these at once and have your foot in the world and your foot in the Lord. And you don't have to make such a big deal about this. Your pastor and some of these other people are kind of crazy. Chill. Those voices are going to disappear. The voice you're going to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in a few things. I'll make you ruler over much. Enter to the joy of the Lord. So those of you who stand with Eric Little at home plate and suffer for it, I admire you. I thank you, and I thank God for you. Those who are struggling to figure out how it works, join the club. But do join the club. Don't run away from this. Run to it. Don't run away from this. Run to it. And you can tell what you're doing, what you're going to do right now. If you're going to run away from this or run to it. And it's you I'm speaking to and saying, God is going to show you why some people are really excited about him. Because you can't really enjoy him if you don't let him be who he really is in your life. He's just religion. And none of us wants just to have a religion. And the only way you're going to know him that way is when you put yourself on the line beyond where you've been. And he proves himself to you. It won't be the old pastor talking or your old parents talking or your grandpa or your grandma talking. It'll be God in your heart living through you. And nobody else can give that to you. And nobody can take it away from you. Let's stand.